This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome back to The Gardening Show. And I'm Igor. You're the Master Gardener. How are you this morning?
Good. I'm real good.
Mr. Bob Harris, and we'll be glad to take your calls, as you just heard. So if you'd like to give us a call, phone lines are open, 814-368-9372. We're on Facebook Live as well, so you can comment on there, and we can read your question that way, or you can email us garden@wesb.com. So what do you have in store for us today?
Well, I got a couple perennials. I've been trying to bring a few plants in every week I want to talk about. And probably a lot of you probably recognize this one. This is the Black-Eyed Susan or Rebecca. This particular one is American Gold Rush.
How do they get Susan out of Rebecca? You'd think it would be Black-Eyed Rebecca instead of Susan.
Geez, you know, I don't know. I should know that.
Why don't they make me in charge of naming these things?
Well, a lot of these plants were named a long, long time ago, and maybe there was a, and no doubt there was a reason. It may be it was very popular. If you invented or found a new plant, you named it after yourself or your wife or one of your children.
How egotistical.
Yeah. So this is Black-Eyed Susan. This is a real sun lover. This one will produce seed. And you'll get more and more Black-Eyed Susans that way if you leave the blossoms on there. You don't have to leave them all on there if it really bothers you. You can, what we've been talking about in weeks past, deadhead, cut off old spent blossoms to encourage more blossoms. But come later in the summer, it's a good idea to leave a few of those old ones there. Not only to make new plants, but it'll also feed the birds a bit. The birds can be pretty doggone important in our yards.
Now, does that, if you just let it be, it'll spread and get bigger as it goes along, or do you have to kind of help it along?
It will spread, but it spreads by the blossoms developing into seed heads, the seeds dropping, they become new plants. It doesn't necessarily spread by getting bigger or dividing itself. It does it all by seed. So it's a great, great plant. You have to wait till this time of year for it to bloom, you know, but still it's a great plant. And it has a very long bloom period. A lot of these will bloom right up to near frost. So it's a great plant, Black-Eyed Susan. Where Susan came from, we don't know. Another one is, I'm bringing in the most popular perennials here and the ones that do the best in Bradford. This one's called Veronica, Magic Snow. Oh, okay. There we go. Magic Snow. Veronica is a great perennial. Now this one will multiply just by itself. More plant material will come out from the base out further and further. So this one we can trim back after all these blossoms are done, and hopefully it will send up new blossoms. Not as many as it is now. Most perennials, most plants, when they first bloom, we call it a flush. It'll have many, many blooms on it. And then the second time, if we cut them back, there'll be blooms, but not quite as many. It takes a lot of energy out of a plant to produce a bloom. More energy even than to just grow leaves and stems. So it's very difficult for the plant to do the reblooming, but they all will. And both of these plants are great for attracting pollinators.
You know what that looks like to me?
What's
looks like the scenes in northern Canada or Alaska.
Oh,
They're like the pine trees with snow on top. Like,
that, yeah,
that's what it kind of resembles with the white dusting on it.
I got to agree.
Yeah.
I like that.
It does look kind of, it looks cool.
Yeah.
Now, how big does that get?
That's about as big as it'll get.
That's the tallest it'll be? Yeah.
Yep.
And then, what's that, about a foot? Not even?
Yeah, about a foot.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let me see what the tag says here. Remember, there's tags in all these plants. And
this is a sun or a shade?
This is a sun lover, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Well, it can get up to 14 inches.
Oh, there you go.
Now the tags...
Not too big, though.
No. We'll say on them a range, usually. This one says 14 to 16 inches. In Bradford, our weather is not conducive of great growing, so we'll always go by the lower number. So that's a good hint when you're putting your perennials out or your shrubs out and so on. You know, if they say it'll grow 1 to 3 feet, probably going to be more like the 1 foot.
Yeah, go on the lower side. Is that because the hills get in the way of the sun?
Yeah, that and a lot of cloud cover. Mm. We don't get a ton of sun here, and we do have a short season. So go by that low number. That's the number really the plant is probably going to end up. But Veronica, also, it'll come in blue also.
Oh.
And a very beautiful blue, almost a purple. it's more like, back up, Bob. It's going to be more like a purple than a blue.
Okay. I was going to say, you know, we were talking about red, white, and blue plants a couple weeks ago, and boy, this would have really been a good suggestion, but no, it is more purplish.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But a great perennial. And I like the white one because white in the garden can be beautiful. I know a lot of people don't like white because it's not colorful, I guess, to them. But white beside a red or a yellow or any other color can make that other color look brighter. So white is very useful in that respect. And white shows up, white and yellow, shows up real well at night. So if you're going to be outside and enjoy your garden at night, white is a very important color. And it attracts different pollinators. So don't discount white flowering plants because they can be very, very useful. One of my favorite plants, white plants. So that's the Veronica. Great perennial, grows very, very well here in Bradford. So I want to go on to a few other things. We had quite a windstorm and there was a bit of damage here and there. And so I want to talk about that a little bit. Number one, you know, if you're not good with a chainsaw, Don't try it. Don't trim your trees. You know, a lot of big branches fell down. Maybe even some. Well, I did see some whole trees that came down.
Mm.
Sometimes you just got to be patient and wait for a professional to get in there. But other signs to look for too. Once a branch does break off a tree, it's probably going to leave jagged edges, and those jagged edges can collect moisture, and that moisture can make a nice home for fungus and mold to get in there and eventually cause some rot in the tree. Now, that's not going to happen overnight. It's a very, very slow process. So don't be concerned that you have to get right out there and do something right away. But if you do have a broken branch, the proper way to cut it is, you know, like my arm is a branch, you'll make a slight bottom cut first, maybe through 1/3 of the branch. And then you can go on top and cut down through the top and it'll drop straight down to the ground that way. But again, I recommend.
Is that to prevent ripping?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That makes sense then.
Ripping, and it helps direct that branch to go straight down. Because a lot of times if we just started on the top, that branch may come over to the side where we are.
Yeah, it'll swing down. I've seen plenty of YouTube videos of that.
Yeah.
Amateurs cutting down branches and knocks them right off the ladder.
Yeah.
It makes for a fun video.
Yeah.
If they're okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very dangerous. Okay. Yeah.
But where that branch connects with the trunk, and I'm going to use my arm again, my arm being the branch and the trunk being my body, there's what they call a branch bark barrier. And it's a swollen area. So we don't want to cut off right directly close to the trunk. We want to leave a little bit of that branch bark barrier. There are special cells in that area that nature has created that will start to form around that open wound. And that will help protect it from the bugs and mold and fungus that may get in there. Now, it takes time. It may take years, but it will develop. And those cells are only found in that branch bark barrier. And what will happen over the years, you'll start to see those cells and that bark and that part of the tree will start to grow over the top of that wound. And at first, it'll look like a donut with a hole in it, over it. And most of the time, it won't cover totally, but it will protect that plant from that moisture and fungus and so on. But also deep inside, there are other cells that will shut off that area totally so that water can't go deep into the part of the tree or the shrub even. And those are barrier cells so that if moisture lays in there, it's blocked off by those other cells. Now, all this takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. It can take years even. But it will protect the tree from mold and fungus and even bugs getting in there. So keep that in mind, you know, to trim it in the right place. Do leave a little bit of a stub there because that's important to protect the inside of the tree.
Is there like a general rule of thumb, like how thick the tree is, how much of a stub that you leave, or just leave a couple inches no matter what?
The rule is going to be the bigger the tree, the bigger that branch bark barrier is going to be. Mm-hmm. So just go by that. There's no real set rule on that.
Mm-hmm. Just leave a little something.
Yes. But that branch bark, and not too much. Don't leave a foot of a stub sticking out of there because that hasn't signaled the tree enough to build that branch bark barrier or those other cells to block off. So leave just a small bit of stub, but don't cut into that branch bark barrier. You know, and if you don't know what you're doing, then ask or hire because it can be very important. You know, our trees can be extremely important to us, especially this year, you know. A lot of trees throwing shade on our yard or a house, you know, could be a huge difference.
Yeah, I'm so glad I have trees around my house.
Because, yes.
Yeah, it would be the heat wave unbearable sometimes.
Yes. So. And So those trees can be extremely, extremely important, not only for the shade and the coolness that they're going to give. They also can cool off an area where your lawn is. Your lawn can be greener underneath the tree. Also, just birds, it's going to help attract birds. Birds are going to eat a lot of bugs. So it makes everything in the world better.
Now, when you were talking about the donut shape that forms around, that immediately put somebody must have done a good job on a tree that I have because I have one of those donuts, but because there's birds that always go in there and make nests inside the donut. I don't know if that's good or not. What do you think?
No harm at all.
Okay.
No, as a matter of fact, the birds may be doing the tree a lot of justice by any insect that's going to get in there. They're going to get rid of it.
Okay.
That's not a bad thing that the birds have made a nest in there.
Now, on the other side, talking about maybe trees that might have bugs in it, the tree next to it has a woodpecker sometimes in there. Should I be concerned?
No. Woodpeckers cannot kill a tree, cannot kill a shrub.
Well, I'm worried about the bugs inside the tree that the woodpecker's after.
Oh, okay. Well, they're a good sign that there are bugs there if woodpeckers are there. But most of the time, they're going to keep that bug population down, so they're protecting the tree.
Oh, good. Okay.
And you know, it can be kind of interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. That sometimes a woodpecker will come to a tree, even if there is not damage and there's no hole or nesting site, and they'll peck a hole. Maybe for trying to find a bug, but also can be to get a little bit of the sap. The sap is full of carbohydrates and sugar, and the woodpecker really likes that.
Oh, okay.
And then in the long term, other birds and animals are watching that. The next up may be after that woodpecker has made that hole and collected his meal, then the squirrels will notice, well, there's a hole there. And the next day they may be up there because it's still probably leaking a little bit of sap. So the squirrels can go up there and get a little bit of that sap. And they're also protecting it by that way. And then other little birds will take advantage of that. So a woodpecker can attract a lot of other good wildlife.
Good. I was always worried about that. Like, oh, no, we have a woodpecker.
Yeah.
The tree must be infested with bugs.
Well, like I say again, but that's a good sign.
Yeah.
You know, it could be.
Mm-hmm.
If the woodpecker gets real, real busy, you probably should look into it. It may be one of the more common bugs are what we call borers. They get just under the bark, and they start feeding. A lot of them in the news now are the emerald ash borer and, some of those that eventually can kill off a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So that woodpecker's giving us a signal. Something's going on there, and maybe we should check it out.
Oh, okay. So I'm not out of the woods yet, but
no.
It's not a tree death sentence if you have a woodpecker.
That's right.
Okay.
Not at all.
Very good. The phone lines are open. If you have a question for Bob, anything gardening related, doesn't have to be what we're talking about necessarily today, but you can give us a call, 814-368-9372. That's 814-368-WESB, 368-9372. We'll take a short break. We'll thank our sponsors at Worth W. Smith Hardware, and we'll be right back with our second half
okay.
of The Gardening Show here on B107.5.
At Worth W. Smith Company, you'll find what you need when it comes to shovels, rakes, pruners, and all sorts of other gardening and landscaping tools. Why take the chance of getting splinters from old dried-up cracked handles or the frustration of fighting with the rusty, chipped cutting edge on your loppers? Their staff is always eager to lend a helping hand with getting you what you need for the job ahead. Stop and see them today at any of their 6 locations in Bradford, Olean, Salamanca, Cuba, and Eldred. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show on WESB, B107.5 FM. We are on Facebook Live, facebook.com/WESB107.5. And have a couple viewers I see on there today. So, hey, thanks for joining us. And what's cool about that is they could always go on after the show and watch the program on demand. So
yes.
On your time. You don't have to be there live. So that's what's cool about that. And we're also on demand at WESB.com if you just want the audio version of the show.
Okay, great.
So we have that, and we have a couple years worth of shows there. So you can get your gardening show, Bob Harris Fix, anytime during the week that you'd like. So what else is on the agenda today there, Bob?
A lot of us with the vegetable gardens. Maybe getting a little concerned, our squash or cucumber, or any of the other large fruits, maybe not getting what we expected, or like with the squash and cucumber, they may start to grow and then turn to mush.
Oh, yeah.
That's a technical term.
Yep.
Yeah. And then fall off. And that's not due to any chemical imbalance in the ground or the plant. 99% of the time, it's due to not being fully pollinated.
Mm.
And we have that problem more and more every year with fewer and fewer bees and other pollinators. Sometimes what we have to do is be the pollinator ourselves. And we can do that simply with a paintbrush and just go from blossom to blossom and tickling the flower deep inside the flower. And we'll transfer that pollen from the male to the female. or from some plants have male and female parts all together. And that way we'll get a good pollination, and then the fruit will be able to grow and develop like it should. So don't think it's anything you haven't watered correctly or you didn't fertilize correctly. It's just a pollination thing.
Oh, okay. So I didn't realize that. I thought, like, if it's not pollinated, well, then it just wouldn't grow anything. But that's not the case. It would grow a mush.
A mush, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Quite often it will. Yeah.
Interesting.
Or even if it's not fully pollinated, you know, that, like, again, in the squash, you know, if a bee didn't get in there and pull a lot of pollen over to the next blossom, maybe just a really small bug went from blossom to blossom, so it didn't get fully pollinated.
Gotcha. Okay.
Or it can even be weather. You know, if we get a long, long streak of rain, the pollinators are not out there, so they're not transferring pollen from one blossom to another, and that will cause that too. So don't think it's something you've done wrong. It's all connected with nature.
You know, ever since I've been talking with you about, you know, learning about pollinators and how good bees are, I always get so, I don't know about if upset's the right word, but I'm aware while I'm cutting the grass on my riding lawnmower.
Oh,
those poor bees, they don't get out of the way fast enough sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, I'm afraid so.
So yeah. Should I be concerned about that? Should I, chase them away somehow? Or I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And you know, I don't either.
Maybe I'll carry a broom with me. Shoo, shoo.
And, you know. I just hope sometimes I'll slow down and hope they get out of the way. Sometimes you just can't. And you got to just hope that another generation's coming to replace them. And most of the time it is.
I mean, I know, like, maybe 3 or 4 bees probably is what it is.
I don't know.
It's not going to make a huge difference, but
yeah,
I always feel bad.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I agree. I do too.
Didn't used to, but darn it, Bob, you've given me a heart.
Even that little toad, if I happen to see it, you know.
Yeah.
I'll stop and wait for him to get out of the way and maybe even sometimes get off the tractor and move him. And, that's, some of us are like that. And it's great that we are.
Gosh, one time I was cutting the grass on a tractor and I couldn't figure out what I was seeing. The ground started moving and things started popping up. I rolled over a rabbit's nest.
Oh, boy.
I didn't chop anything up, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because they were underneath, but boy, that upset them. And all these babies started coming out like, whoa.
Yeah.
Took me a while because it's like I wasn't expecting that. What are these rat mice things coming out? No, they're rabbits.
So, yeah, it's a good example of, you know, we got to pay attention even when we're just mowing the lawn. I know it can be real zen-like to some of us for just walking along mindlessly mowing.
Mm-hmm.
But, still pay attention. We are affecting nature. A little bit more on pollination. I was telling you about transferring pollen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some plants don't need a pollinator, like corn. Corn that's wind pollinated. So we always want to plant them in close rows so that when wind comes through, it will transfer the pollen from one plant to another. The tomato is also one. It can be pollinated several different ways, but wind is its number one way. And now if we don't have wind, and what I like to do once in a while, if I'm going to go out and water my tomato plant or trim it, give it a shake. And that will dislodge the pollen. The pollen grains are so small, they'll float around in the air and go from one blossom and hopefully land on another blossom. So we get better pollination even on our tomato plant that way.
Do you ever try like blowing on them just to give a little bit more wind?
No.
Here you go, you shake it and
you know, in large agricultural greenhouses where they grow tomatoes hydroponically, mm-hmm. They grow them on a long string, and they have an apparatus connected to that string that every now and then will shake that string. Which shakes the plants, dislodges the pollen, floats around, so they get a good, what we call fruit set, or mm-hmm. more tomatoes.
Cool.
That way. So not all plants need a pollinator, but so sometimes we just got to go out there and shake them.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have about 4 minutes left in the show.
Okay. Talking about tomatoes, it may be a good idea now this time of the season where your tomato plant's still growing a lot of new branches and growth, that maybe we want to trim them off, especially if we already have fruit growing. You know, we don't want all that energy going to the new growth. We want it to go to the tomatoes that are on the vine already, or the main part of the vine, with those blossoms. We want to keep them that have been on there for a while, and develop a better tasting, better shape, and bigger fruit that way. So it's always a good idea to trim your tomato plant. A lot of times I even like to, what we call top my tomato plant. Once they get to a certain height, depending on the plant, I'll just start cutting off the whole top, because chances are anything on the very top that blooms is not going to have enough time to develop into a good tomato, or it's not gonna, the plant's not going to be able to support it. Mm-hmm. So it's a good idea just to trim them off. Pruning the tomato is a real key to good crop of tomatoes.
And I just want to point out one thing that you just kind of casually said. Yes, a tomato is a fruit.
Oh, yeah.
Not a vegetable.
That's true. Yeah.
Debate's over. Bob said so.
Also, earlier this morning, you brought up the fact that Igor has chickens. And chickens eat a lot of bugs, including the Japanese beetle.
Yeah, I was talking about that. I don't have a problem with the beetles, but my neighbors do.
Yes. And some of us are seeing some Japanese beetles. This is not their year for their big flush of damage, but there still are a lot around. And if you are setting out those beetle traps, the key to those beetle traps, they work. They work.
They work too good. I was putting a couple of years ago, put the bait in. They weren't waiting for it.
Oh,
they were buzzing me all around and have the bait. And oh, let me get it in the bag first.
Well, I'll talk about the bait first. That is it's a pheromone. It's a scent, a sexual scent that attracts them. They think they're going to be able to breed there. And of course, they're kind of clumsy, so they hit there where that pheromone is and drop down into the bag. Now, the important part is to empty the bag. After you get a few dead beetles in the bottom of the bag, you have to empty that bag. Otherwise, the trap will start to work in reverse. It will deter the beetles because all those dead beetles, that scent is overpowering the pheromone scent. So the beetles stay away. So the secret to successful trapping is to empty the bag often. Don't let it get half full or all the way full. You know, it probably will eventually, but it's a good idea to empty that bag. You'll have a lot more success.
And a lot less stink.
Yeah.
Those things smell bad.
They can, yes. And another thing is one that I prefer. Now, there are a lot of chemicals that will kill the beetles off, but it's all about timing, when to apply. But my favorite is a product called Milky Spore. It's not a chemical. It's a living bacterium that you will sprinkle on your lawn. It's there forever. Or a lot of them will claim for 50 years. That's as good as forever for most of us. So we sprinkle that on the lawn. As the beetle population develops, that Milky Spore population will also develop. And it attacks the beetles under the ground in their larval stage, the worm. So that gradually over the years, we'll have fewer and fewer of them. So that Milky Spore is probably the best thing I can recommend for Japanese beetles.
Very good. Very insightful. Thank you so much again.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mr. Master Gardener, Bob Harris, and The Gardening Show will be back next Saturday morning, as always, at 8:30, and always on demand at wesb.com. And you have a fantastic weekend.
You too.
Thank you so much.